Today on the Locked On Sabres and the Locked On Vegas Golden Knights podcast, Jack Eichel's return to Buffalo. Tony Cordasco and myself, Joe DiBiase, going to get into Eichel, the trade, and his return to Buffalo, which comes Thursday night at 7 o'clock Eastern time.
You're Locked On Sabres, your daily podcast on the Buffalo Sabres. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks for making Locked On your first listen every day. We're free and available on all platforms. The Locked On crossover for the Buffalo Sabres and the Vegas Golden Knights, Locked On Sabres and Locked On Golden Knights. Joe DiBiase from Locked On Sabres, Tony Cordasco from Locked On Golden Knights. I was guessing I would talk to you, Tony. I know we haven't spoken before, but I looked you up about a week ago. I'm like, that's the guy I got to reach out to before next Thursday. So I had an idea that we were going to be talking.
Our fans in Buffalo, as excited as perhaps VGK fans are, just to see what happens, what transpires in this matchup between the Sabres and Jack Eichel.
Basically. I would say,
well, it is a one-man team right now. I got to say that too.
Right. It's exciting because there aren't really a lot of games that there's a lot of hype for. I mean, they're at the bottom of the standings. It's like, what are these games? It's just kind of, they go by and you wouldn't even notice them a lot of times. And it's like, okay, this is something where you're anticipating something big's going to happen with his return, the crowd reaction. So yeah, I think fans are really fired up. Golden Knights fans too. Like, they recognize the importance of this for Buffalo, I'm imagining.
Yeah, well, you know, especially since the Golden Knights come off of, you know, some clunkers, and they lost to Philadelphia and they lost 2-1, and they're just not playing with any intensity right now. I think that the fans are concerned about that. To me, on this road trip, it's a must-win game because they go back-to-back. They leave Buffalo and they go to Pittsburgh. So there's a lot of elements and a lot of storylines in this contest. And so now they have a tribute video and everything. What will Buffalo do to welcome back Jack Eichel?
It's going to be a tribute video. By the way, if you want to follow us on social media, I'm at Sneaky Joe Sports. Tony is at Tony Dasco for my Sabres followers, at Tony DASCO. Tony also of the Bet Las Vegas 1140 Odyssey Station. We're locked on. Connected through Locked On and connected through Odyssey, because obviously I'm here at WGR in Buffalo. So be sure to check us out on social media. But yeah, there's going to be a video. Now, here's the thing. Monday, Tony, Sam Reinhart made his return. It was reunion week. Sam Reinhart made his return with the Florida Panthers. And I don't want to go too far criticizing the video itself, because then what are you doing? You're probably criticizing some 25, 26 year olds that are working in like their video department. It's not necessarily the organization itself. The video was kind of lame. The video was kind of lame on Monday for Sam Reinhart. And I'm not expecting the video itself to be great on Thursday night. And then also, you know, the buildings have kind of been empty. I think there's disdain towards Eichel. I think the crowd reaction plus the video, I think it's not going to be this happy-go-lucky, you know, standing ovation, thank you for your service, Jack Eichel, on Thursday. I think it's going to be either kind of nonchalant, or it might get real negative real quick towards him.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, I was wondering about the fact, has he fallen out of favor there with the Buffalo fans? And are they going to show him on this video, said video, in a neck brace or something? Like, what will the 25-year-old do?
I don't know how negative it will get, but there's definitely disdain. You know, like, I don't even think it's all his fault. I actually have defended him repeatedly as, you know, like, I recognize it's just the way sports work, right? Like, a star player leaves and asks to be traded, and he gets booed the next time he comes, and fans inevitably will kind of, you know, they'll turn on him. But was any of it really, like, could you blame him? I mean, they were going into a rebuild. It was a team that didn't want to give him the surgery that he wanted, so they weren't giving him the medical freedom to make that decision. They were going into a rebuild. He hadn't been to the playoffs in 6 years. He's a star player that's watching his career go by him. I mean, how could anybody possibly blame him for wanting out of this situation? But again, it's just kind of a natural occurrence in sports that when they do want out, you're going to turn against him. And I think what made it even worse was it got dragged out. You know, if he had been traded right away, like if right as the offseason began and he got dealt, and we didn't have to go through 3 months of offseason, a month of the season itself, it dragged out into the regular season. If all that didn't happen and it happened quicker, I think that there wouldn't be as much negative energy towards Eichel. But there is. Like, I would expect him to get booed. It won't be all boos. There will be some cheering, I think. It might be a mix. But I think you're going to hear, if you're watching on TV, you're going to hear boos, I think, on Thursday night.
And Joe, I really want to know what Eichel's reaction will be, you know, to the Buffalo fans on his return back there. And then we don't really know here in Las Vegas. We don't know Jack Eichel. We can't, it's not touchable due to the pandemic, and we just don't know him here. But what could you tell us about his personality, having covered him for so many years?
I think he gets kind of a bad rap because he is a little bit of a, he could be a quiet guy at times. Like, I don't think he loves doing media. He doesn't love doing like the locker room scrums after the fact, but he's also not, you know, there are some guys that can get kind of not vicious, but they can kind of bite back at stuff like that. He just kind of, he goes along with it. And also I think he was given the captaincy, and in part because he was the face of the franchise. He's not that raw, you know, speech and the second intermission type of guy. I think in an ideal world, he's wearing an A for the rest of his career. I don't think you ever want him to kind of be, you know, that leader of the franchise. He could be the best player for your franchise, but I'm not sure you ever want him to be the leader of it. And that sometimes, though, got misconstrued into he was a bad locker room guy because he was the captain and he had that nature about him. And it kind of got misconstrued as he's bad for the locker room. He's bad for young players. And I don't think that was ever the case. There were examples of him kind of taking young players like Victor Olofsson when he first got here, and last year Dylan Cousins under his wing, and kind of like, even you would see him on the iPad on the bench, like pointing out to Dylan Cousins, like on the power play, I want you standing here, not here, like kind of coaching them up. So he had some of those qualities, but again, he wasn't all the way there. And I think that is the reputation that he began to earn, was almost one of being poisonous. And the other thing that kind of added to that, I thought, was he played a part in it, but he maybe wasn't the ringleader. And the players wanted Dan Bylsma fired. This is what, 4 or 5 years ago now, former Penguins coach, Stanley Cup winner in Buffalo for 2 years. He was up for an extension, and the players, really all of them, wanted Bylsma out. They turned against him. He lost the locker room. And for whatever reason, Eichel was still young too. He's 20 years old. For whatever reason, all of that kind of got put on Eichel, as Eichel wanted the coach fired. Eichel, you know, he's the coach killer. And that was another reputation. I think it got out of hand. I'm not saying he is completely innocent as to all these things, but I think that a lot of the issues that occurred with Eichel, and there were some, they went to an extremist form in terms of the reaction. So I think you're getting a good guy. I think you're getting a guy that with an infrastructure that's already in place in Vegas, he'll come right in, and I don't think he'll skip a beat. But when he had to kind of be the centerpiece where you're building all that, you know, that intangible stuff around, that's where I think he got a little bit uncomfortable. So I think you're getting a guy that's gonna mold into the locker room well. He's gonna fit well with the players that are there, especially when Mark Stone comes back. Like, Tony, I don't know if you've already kind of daydreamed about those two playing together. I think the style on the ice, they're going to fit perfectly together.
My only concern about Mark Stone is that he's not fast enough. And
that's true.
To me, Jack Eichel is playing levels above any player on the ice for the Golden Knights. And right now, who knows where he's at, 50, 60, 70% of his former self, you know, pre-surgery. And to me, I think he's struggling with any line mate. And you were talking, Joe, about, you know, him like kind of nurturing and bringing along like a Dylan Cousins. He came in here and he's telling Max Pacioretty where to go on the ice. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's an absolute, you know, leader. He's a team leader. But I don't know if there is a piece on this Golden Knights team that can keep up with him. Jonathan Marchessault, I think, might be the closest. Yeah. They scored on a tic-tac-toe play on the power play on Tuesday night. and Eichel just, you know, found Marchessault, who found Dadonov for the goal. But to me, I don't know who else on this team really can play at that speed. He plays at a much different speed than any player on this team. He's far better.
Yeah, and Marchessault too. Like, I wonder, because I know you're talking about speed here, and he kind of fits for that. But to my knowledge, they've kind of kept that Marchessault, Carlson, Riley Smith line together. And like, maybe that could be a good idea though. Like, would you think that is a good idea to break that line up to get Marchessault with Eichel?
Yeah, for sure. And I just, for some reason, I think that, you know, I think William Carlson has all the secrets, you know, of Bill Foley's life, you know, dating back, you know, for several years, because he just seems to be the untouchable guy, but he hasn't scored in 10 games. He has 7 goals this season. He was injured early on. He's not doing much on the ice. And for some reason, they keep him and that Misfits line. That's what they call the second line, because there were a bunch of Misfits coming here from different organizations and what have you. They're keeping that Misfits line together. Sooner or later, let's face it, because we know that Riley Smith is a free agent, expiring contract coming up, could be dealt. Marchessault, I think, fits like a glove on that top line, and they're starting to put them in together on the power play, and maybe that's an omen of things to come. Pacioretty's pretty solid. In the game on Tuesday night, Eichel had 9 shots on goal, all good looks, and this team is playing very tentative right now, and the Golden Knights, they're just not pulling the trigger. Like, when they have an open shot, they're overpassing, or their shots are on goal, but they're not quality shots. And Eichel and Marchessault had 16 shots on goal in the loss to Philadelphia. So those two are starting to find a chemistry together, but I don't know who that third piece is. They've tried Nick Waugh has been there, and they also moved Chandler Stephenson from the top line center to on that top line as well.
Is that, well, before I ask you that, like, they're, you mentioned they're not playing great as of late. They've only won 4 of their last 10. And we were talking a little bit before we started recording here about, like, them and their expectations. And, like, they obviously make the Eichel trade because those expectations are to win the Stanley Cup. But they are in a race. Like, they're only 4 points clear of a playoff spot. And I wonder, from your vantage point, like, I'm sure our Sabre fans would be interested to hear, like, is it a sure thing that they'll make the postseason? Because the Sabres do have their first-round pick, and Sabre fans might have a reason to root against them because of that.
Yeah, to me, they're still a bubble team, and I don't care who's playing on the ice. The Pete DeBoer system worked earlier this season. It's not working now. They had to, you know, Eichel had to play the savior again in the game against the Senators on Sunday. He scored the winning goal with 5 seconds to go in the contest. Right. And if not, they might have gone into overtime. They could have lost that game. They're not playing well at home. And everyone's like, oh, you know, when Stone comes back in the playoffs, what playoffs? It's not a short. There's no guarantee that this Golden Knights team is going to be a playoff team. They are a bubble team right now at best, and they're not playing with any emotion. There's no emotion on this team. And, you know, they're just kind of sleepwalking through the Senators. They're sleepwalking, you know, through Philadelphia, and they cannot beat the good teams. Their number one quality wins against Tampa Bay and against the Rangers. And those are their two top, but Calgary's beating them. The Avalanche have beaten them like a drum. This is not a good team. I don't know what the fans, they get so hyped up because they expect so much out of this team, spoiled early with the early success of this franchise. And the fans right now, like, now they're starting to see a little bit of adversity sink in. But to me, they're not a quality team right now. They can't win night in and night out. They can't win on home ice, cannot beat the really good teams in the NHL.
So what do they really need most? Like, the deadline is coming up, and, you know, like, we mentioned Eichel and, like, maybe his need for, like, another guy that goes on the wing with him. But I think Leonard's been hurt too, who we know well here in Buffalo. So, like, goaltending behind him, like, I don't know. What do you think they need going into the deadline for a playoff run?
Well, first of all, let me ask you what you think about Robin Leonard, because to me, I don't think that Robin Leonard and Laurent Brossoit are the two goalies that are going to win a cup for Las Vegas. End of story.
Okay. I've always been a defender of Leonard. I don't know that I would jump to he's a cup-winning goaltender, though, if you know what I mean. Like, I would think that it's possible that he could be the starting goaltender if a team in front of him is that gifted that he could be that guy. But are you going to win a cup because of him? I might want to stop short of saying that. Just as a for reference, my you know, the 3 years that he was here in Buffalo, I was defending him to no end, but it was in a different context. It was always arguing whether or not he's a starting goalie, because it was the Sabres had traded for him and he was anointed as the number one. And everyone's like, okay, this guy's not really all that good. And I'm like, actually, look at the numbers, look at the production. Like, no, they're not winning, but it's not really his fault that they're not winning. And then he left and he kind of proved that he's a starting goalie. Is he a cup winning goalie? I think I would stop short of saying that. So that I would agree with you. And then Brassois, I mean, backing up in Winnipeg, I mean, he's your insurance option right now. Like, I think maybe goalie, as you kind of we were talking about here, goalie might be a spot where they want to do something at the deadline.
Yeah. Georgiev, his name has been mentioned, but he's lost his last three with the Rangers. Varlamov has been another target potentially. We know one thing about the Golden Knights. I feel that just based on their past history here, I think they're going to make a trade deadline deal or two. They're a team that, like I've always said, they will sign a player regardless of what their salary is and then face the salary cap ramifications later. They just don't care. There is no salary cap here. And they know that they could, like a Mark Stone. We don't know the severity of his back injury. Is he really that hurt, or are they just kind of doing the Kucherov thing and storing him away? I call him Mark Stowe because they're stowing him away.
Right. We'll talk more about the Eichel trade, also the returns from the Eichel trade, because a couple of guys that the Sabres got in the deal that have been playing really well. We'll go through Alex Tuch, Peyton Krebs when we come back here in just a second. But first, I want to take a minute to tell you about Bet Online. Football season might be over for this season, but basketball's in full steam and hockey for both pro and college hoops. Saber fans, if you want to bet on Owen Power in Michigan to win, you could do that at betonline.net. It's the latest odds, player performance props to where the next fired coach is going to be. BetOnline.net is the number one spot for all your sports betting needs. And it's not just basketball and hockey. BetOnline.net is your source for boxing and UFC odds as well. Head to their website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Speaking of betting, I have a Stanley Cup bet on the Los Angeles Kings that you might find interesting from a while ago, a couple months ago.
It's really good value. What's it at?
It was at plus 5,500.
Very nice.
And they're up to plus 3,300. And like, actually, before we get to Alex Tuch, Peyton Krebs, by the way, Joe DiBiase, Tony Gordasco here on Locked On Crossover, Sabres and Golden Knights. We talked about the Golden Knights and the playoffs. Has that been a surprise, how good that division has ended up being? Because I think when I looked at that division before the season, it was, it's Vegas, and then maybe it's Edmonton, and then, like, I'm just not sure about anybody else. And the division's actually turned out to be pretty good, I think.
Yeah, it's turned out to be really good. And, you know, I thought that the Ducks might sustain their early season success, but they're kind of falling off. Edmonton, if they get a goalie, how interesting would it be if they got Marc-Andre Fleury by trade deadline, though?
We're asking if Edmonton gets a goalie.
If Edmonton gets some defense behind them. But, yeah, I mean, that could be interesting. Calgary, I think, is, you know, head and shoulders above the rest in the division. But I'm pretty surprised, you know, by the success. We knew that the Kings were building something special. They've got a very good farm system, and now they're starting to play very well together. I think they're going to hold up there in the division. Yeah. And VGK, I don't know when this run is going to happen. I thought, well, okay, maybe against Philadelphia, they win that game. They get three in a row. Looks like a pretty easy, not easy, but a very good and advantageous road trip in the five games. And now it's like you start off on the wrong foot. And will there be a domino effect? Mm-hmm. I mean, I could see them losing two of the three. If they beat Buffalo, they still have to go to Pittsburgh the next night. So it's going to be difficult for the Golden Knights.
Right. Those two teams, by the way, would play in the first round if the season ended today, the Kings and the Golden Knights. So let me ask you, like, when the trade first happened, when Eichel gets dealt and you see through Twitter or through media or whatever, however you see it, that it's Alex Tuch, it's Peyton Krebs, and then it's the picks also, the first and the second round pick. Like, what is your reaction to what the Golden Knights gave up and the players that they gave up to the Sabres?
Well, the first thing was the Golden Knights were the sticking point in that trade was Peyton Krebs for some reason. And so they kept playing him and they were hoping that he would have some early success, and they weren't too sure if they wanted to get rid of that piece. Tuck was coming off of an injury, so they knew that they would maybe perhaps get him in a deal. And then, you know, knowing that he wanted to go back home, it just was the perfect fit. And then the picks, they have a lot of assets here. But I was curious, too, Joe, about Peyton Krebs. And I know when he first arrived there, he went down to the minors, right, to get his game refined a little bit. But how is he playing now? He's centering the third line. And here in Las Vegas, they were playing him sometimes on the wing. He just was not the right fit here at that time.
Sure.
So how is Krebs now playing? And then we know about Alex Tuck and all that he brings. And he's just he's a guy that they're missing his heart and soul on this team right now.
Yeah.
And they're also missing his speed because he's very quick. And there could be a guy that would have fit in really well with Jack Eichel on a wing because he's so fast up and down the ice.
He really is like the modern day power forward, like because he's got the size and the physicality, but his ability, like you said, to just blaze up and down the ice. It's almost amazing how he skates that fast, given his size. Krebs has been on the third line. They've really wanted to show a commitment to him being a centerman. They've played him a little bit on the wing, but I think that's kind of why he's been on the third line. And really, the Sabres have the way their team is currently constructed. They have a definitive top line: Tage Thompson, Jeff Skinner, Alex Tuck. That is their top line. It's not even close. They are easily the most consistent line night to night. And then they have a definitive fourth line with Cody Eakin, John Hayden, and Anders Bjork, who they get run over. They might be one of the worst lines in hockey. Like it's bad. It's really bad. The second and the third lines are kind of interchangeable. Like ice time, they're relatively the same. You know, opportunities late in games, they're relatively the same. So he's kind of on the two B line, almost, I would want to call it. But really, the opportunity he's gotten the most to shine is on that number one power play unit. And he's really filled in on the right wing, on the right side, really well as the distributor. I think that's kind of been the book on him. And maybe that was even before, you know, with Vegas and as a prospect through his development, is the shot is really not there. Like, I don't think there's going to be a 30 goal scorer in there somewhere, but his vision has really shown up with the Sabres. His vision to make these cross ice passes that nobody else on the team would even dare try, these drop passes into space that, again, like his vision, he's like almost not even looking at it, and he knows exactly where the pass has to go. And he's up to 11 points in 24 games, so he's doing okay. It's nothing crazy. But to me, he's showing signs that he belongs to be in the NHL, and that's at least to start with, and that there's enough playmaking there that we could be talking about a legit top six player even within the next year or two. But is he there yet? I would say no, because he's definitely been very inconsistent night to night. And then, like, Tuck, as you mentioned, like, Tuck has just been a dream so far. You know, like, everyone loves him. He's given hugs around, like, to every player that scores and, like, the goalies after games. He's definitely the rah-rah guy, the heart and soul player, like you mentioned. And the offensive production has kind of blown me away. Like, he's a point-a-game player since he arrived from the Golden Knights. That's what I wanted to ask you. His ice time's gone up, so I guess I don't want to completely rule out that he could be a point-a-game player in the future, because it does happen. Brad Marchand, you know, it took him 6 years before he was that player. But something's holding me back still from just anointing Alex Tuck as, oh yeah, they've got a 70-plus point player. I think all the other stuff's going to come with it, but what do you think? Like, his ceiling offensively to you would be what?
Well, I think he could be in the 50, 60-point range,
yeah.
I think, easily. He missed so many inside shots, like in the blue paint. He just was struggling just to get those breaks. You know, he didn't.
Sure.
He didn't benefit. I called it Tuck luck instead of puck luck because he was just. I mean, everything was just like getting saved, hitting the post, whatever. I think he went through a, you know, a spell like that, but he was always the first man in, you know, on the ice into the offensive zone. And I think he's going to get his chances every night, and his speed obviously holds up. But I think you've got a guy that could sustain this type of production for quite some time. I really do. I saw some glimpses of it here in Las Vegas, but now he's getting, you know, the extended ice time that he needs. And again, like you were saying about Krebs, he's a developmental guy, and he's going to, you know, pretty much be the future, perhaps the second line center, you know, as you mentioned. And what about Cody Eakin too? You have Cody Eakin, another former VGKer on the fourth line, mm-hmm. right? He's centering the fourth line now.
He has not been a fan favorite. Let's say that. The contract was, I mean, it's nothing crazy, you know, like $2 million. I think fans really wanted that spot for a young guy. They've had a lot of kind of developing bottom six type centermen that I think fans wanted to see get a chance this year and last year. And Eakin kind of has been kind of taking up space there. He's probably going to be traded, though. You know, there was actually a rumor even about a week ago from Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet that there's been interest around the league in acquiring him for a playoff run. Because the one thing that he'll give you is the faceoffs, right? Like, if you need him to take a defensive zone faceoff late in the game, or you need him to take an important penalty kill faceoff, you know, he's going to give you value in that way. And we're not talking anything crazy. They might get a fifth or a sixth round pick for him. I would say he really hasn't added much to the future of this team. The idea of bringing him in the first place was Ralph Krueger's, their former head coach, who's been gone for about a year now, to fix the penalty kill, because they were brutal 2 years ago. Krueger thought Eakin would be the key to fixing the penalty kill, and he has, but that the line that he centers just gets run over at 5-on-5 most times. So kind of a bit role player that I would imagine gets dealt at the deadline, and I would say that's probably the story on Eakin so far this year. I don't know. Could we talk
about trade deadline?
Definitely.
Buffalo is going to do. But first, I think, you know, for the Golden Knights, the one player they really have to get off the payroll is Evgeny Dodonov. He scored his first goal Tuesday night in 14 games on the power play, as I had mentioned earlier. But $5 million, and Pete DeBoer had him playing. He was on the top line. He just couldn't handle the sauce. He couldn't handle the passes from Eichel. And so Pete DeBoer moved him off of the top line. And then in the game against the Senators, he was the fourth line winger at $5 million.
Yeah.
And then they moved him in the Philadelphia game to the third line. They can't find a place. Maybe they're perhaps trying to showcase him by keeping him out on the ice. But I think he would have to be the number one target. I think the Golden Knights still need playoff caliber goaltending. I really do. And Leonard's a wild card. He gets injured. He gave up just a really bad couple of goals in the Philadelphia game, one from the point and the other one was a wraparound goal. And to me, he just has these lapses in his game. And then Brossoit he's lost three of his last four. And I think you might see Brossoit in the game against Buffalo because they're playing a back-to-back. You can almost, you know, assuredly see that. But yeah, I think it would be Dodonov would be number one, expiring contract, perhaps Riley Smith, fan favorite. But, you know, again, if you're up against the cap, he might go. And then I think that they definitely need a goaltender and maybe move Brossoit out of there.
Dodonov could be someone that I think about for Buffalo. I mean, they're in a place
now. You pick
now,
up $5 million? Do they have enough on the cap?
They're closer to the cap floor. You know, like they're in that space where like Arizona normally lives, where they have to pick up contracts just to reach the cap floor because all of their important players are on entry level deals, except for Alex Tuch. So like they have been looking to do that. They did it with Will Butcher in the offseason, where like if someone's got a contract that you need to get rid of, like we'll take it. We'll help you out because we kind of need that salary on our books. I don't know if that would happen at a deadline move. That usually happens more so in the offseason, but they'll be looking to take salary on, and then they got a couple UFAs. Like Colin Miller is the number one former Golden Knights defenseman that they're going to be looking to move because it's pretty unrealistic to think that he's going to, I think, stick around in the offseason. He was traded here and he's done pretty well for them for a couple of years. But any veteran like that that's kind of going into their final contract, I don't think Buffalo is really the destination right now that you would think it's realistic to re-sign him. So get what you can, maybe a second round pick if you're lucky. The last year's market might dictate that more of a third round pick is more realistic. And then they've got a couple other UFA guys, but it's going to be a pretty quiet deadline, I would imagine, for the Sabres. So
it's been a crazy second half, you know, of the season too. I mean, out here in the West, we've got Arizona just exploding and they've got some very good young talent.
Yeah.
9 goals. And I mean, they're just playing so well. And it's a good thing they're not in the Pacific Division, because they would be battering some of these teams, especially the lower division. But to me, I just wanted to know more about the Sabres and how they're playing, and can they spring an upset over the Golden Knights? And what should the Golden Knights look out for in this upcoming battle on Thursday night?
They could listen. They had a horrible game on Monday night against Florida. They got beat down 6-1, but
I watched the Kings game though. It was a 1-0 game, right? And two empty netters.
Two empty netters. They played with the Kings as best they could. They couldn't generate a lot of chances, but they did limit LA from getting a lot of their own chances. And then the game prior, they beat the Leafs and they kind of boat raced them. Like, it was maybe their best performance of the season that they beat Toronto, and they kind of dominated them from beginning to end. And Toronto has games like that where they'll look like the best team one night in the league and they'll look like the worst team the next night, but they're playing better as of late. I think the one thing you got to watch out for if you're the Golden Knights is you got to smother that top line. Like, the Sabres have one line offensively that shows up night to night to night. That Tage Thompson centering Alex Tuch, Jeff Skinner line, I mean, they've been dynamite since they've been put together. Every shift they're out there, it seems that they are getting high quality scoring chances. And that's honestly, it's them. And then, like, Rasmus Dahlin's had a better season this year. He's done a great job controlling the puck, but they're kind of thin. They're thin on the blue line behind Dahlin. I think they're thin in the forward group behind their top line. And then in goal, they're just kind of, I think, trying to get through the season right now. So while they're, like, Dahlin is one individual that you got to watch out for, and that one line you got to watch out for, the Sabres are a team where really right now you could pick them apart throughout the rest of the roster. Like, when the Golden Knights line their second and third and fourth lines up against the Sabres, they should have the advantage, I think, every time they're out there.
And then Malcolm Subban is on the injured reserve list. Is that what I saw?
Yeah, he's done for the year. He got a bad injury like a month ago. So they've, I think, kind of floated the idea out there of bringing him back after the year, because he's a free agent, because he played pretty well for them in the little limited action he got. But his season and maybe his Sabre career is probably behind him.
I want to talk about special teams. And here for the Golden Knights, they have scored on the power play unit the last two games. Of course, the Eichel game winner and then the Eichel assisted goal against Philadelphia. But I wanted to ask you about the special teams for the Buffalo Sabres. And for the Golden Knights, though, something that's concerning to me, in the last two games, they've given up 8 shorthanded shots on goal. Wow. Which I think could be a sign. And then also, I want to talk physicality, because every night, night in and night out, the Golden Knights just get beat up. They are out hit every single night. That's going to hurt them in the back-to-back, I think, this upcoming weekend. But can Buffalo play a heavy game? That's a lot to unpack there, but
yeah, no. So power play, like, their number one unit is dynamite. The one that I mentioned with Krebs. Krebs has done a great job with it. Dahlin, they've got distributors. Thompson's got the big shot on the left. They're a middle of the pack power play, though. So even with that being said, they're middle of the pack in the league. Their penalty kill has been disastrous at times. Now, they've actually changed that up, though. Recently, they went away from what you typically see, which is you see those third, fourth line guys. They kind of can have time at practice to specialize, like a Cody Eakin, to kind of focus in on the PK. And Don Granato, this is one thing I love about Granato. When things aren't working, he is not afraid to get experimental. It's why Tage Thompson is at center. Thompson, for 3 years, was really not working on the wing. He had never played center in his life. And Granato said, you know what, let's just try it and see what happens. And he's a 30-goal scorer this year. And what he's done on the penalty kill recently is, okay, nothing's really working. You know what? Let me just throw my best two players out there. He's like, let me put Thompson and Tuch out there. They're both big. You know, Tuch is what, 6'5"? Thompson is 6'7". So they got this long reach, and we might generate some chances on the PK. And that's kind of worked. So it's a little unusual to see two guys, especially Thompson, because Thompson is not good in his own end. But to kind of throw them out there on the penalty kill and see, like, let me just see what happens. That's been working for them as of late. And then finally, yeah, like the physicality, they're really not that physical of a team. Like, if you want to push them around, you can. Sometimes that'll actually get you beat, because the Sabres are a fast team. And when they play some of these teams that want to try to outmuscle them, sometimes it works. And then there's other times where they're just kind of skating circles around them. That's one of the better parts about this team this year, I would think, is their foot speed. And a lot of that comes with them being so young too. But there's not really a single guy I think of, like, yeah, like, he's Robert Hag, I guess, but he's third pair defenseman. There's no impactful player other than Tuck. Tuck would be the one. Tuck is the one where he could bully you around, but that's about it, I would say, for the Sabres.
Yeah, and defensively, the Golden Knights are missing a big piece with Brady McNabb. He's, I think, still leading the NHL in block shots. And Alex Pietrangelo just plays too many minutes. And the thing about the VGK defensemen is that they pinch so often and they're getting beat on the odd man rush back the other way. So I think this Vegas Golden Knights team is just too finesse. And they miss Ryan Reeves like nobody's business. Yeah. They do. And, of course, Marc-Andre Fleury. And those two guys were glue guys, kept the team together, and also kept them kind of loose. And I don't think, and even with Mark Stone, who does have a C on his sweater, I don't believe that he is a team leader. Like, he'll get out there and he'll get a little fired up and he'll do some big celebrations and all of that. But to me, I don't know how he leads the team. And to me, like, you know, again, Jack Eichel, the jack of all trades, that's what that trade was. Eichel, you know, has really, you know, I just can't believe how good he is and how much more. I'm just looking towards the future. I don't have anything to compare it to because I didn't watch, you know, a lot of Buffalo games, to be quite honest, but I don't know what to compare it to. But he is just like head and shoulders every night, the best player for the Golden Knights on the ice, if not, you know, for, and his minutes are starting to get extended now, if not for the best player on the ice, period. And he's got like this acceleration. Can you talk about some of that, like his type of game and his lower body strength is just amazing because it looks like he's just kind of breezing through the neutral zone. Then he's got another gear and then he's out skating three guys to the front of the net. And I don't think I've seen, well, we haven't seen that before here. It's not Alex Tuck type speed. It's deceptive speed to me.
Yeah, no, it is. And by the way, you're not missing much, not watching a lot of Buffalo games the past couple of years. Don't get me wrong. He is such a unique skater, too, because like as someone that played hockey, like I don't think I've ever played with someone and like I can't even imagine skating the way he does, because typically you're hunched over a little bit. You're putting a lot of emphasis on your knees and he's like so straight up. Like his upper body is always so straight up and all the power is coming through his legs. He's really a unique skater. You're right. The acceleration is just, it's crazy. It's different skater than even like a McDavid who's like quick feet. His feet are moving a million miles an hour. I feel like Eichel skates like a gazelle. He's just like these big long strides up the ice. It's something to behold when, you know, when you're playing hockey and you just see like how he skates. It's so hard to even talk about him because you still wish he was here. And you know why it ended, and like it's we've accepted why it ended because the team couldn't get it together, and that's what's frustrating because we know how dominant of a player he was. I mean, the last time he was healthy for the Sabres, he was in the MVP consideration. If the Sabres had made the playoffs 2 years ago, I think Eichel would have won the MVP. Like that's how good he was, and he's capable of putting up crazy production, top 10 in the league. He's going to be your number one playmaker. He's going to be the best shot on your team. He's a complete overall package offensively. And he got the job done consistently here for 5 years. It's just, they couldn't surround him with enough talent to ever get near the playoffs. And finally the guy said, I can't do a rebuild. And again, as I said earlier, I don't know how you could blame him for that. So his style of game, I mean, it's just, it's like almost perfect, you know. Like he's not a Selke level player in his own end, but even that got better. Like that was the one thing, the one hole in his game that I thought was present in the first couple of seasons was he was pretty inconsistent. He would lose his man in his own end, but that happens for a lot of young players. And really once he turned 23, 24, that all went away. Like he used his strength to his advantage, his speed to his advantage. He uses a longer stick than most people do. So he used that to his advantage. And he became a pretty good two-way player. And again, the offensive talent, man, it could be crazy good at times. He'll go on stretches. He hasn't yet for the Golden Knights because he hasn't played enough games, but he'll go on stretches where he looks like the best player in the world. And that is a world.
I could see that happening.
Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon.
Yeah, and to me, the only thing that could hold back Eichel would be his frustration, you know, with this team and his teammates not getting in sync or not being where they need to be. And, you know, his very first game back, I'll never forget, just, again, like he did everything with this delicate surgery that was, you know, expected, you know, from the doctors and the staff. And he just, you know, worked out, was back on the ice, just kept it very precision-like, very dedicated. And then his very first game back, he's out there hitting. I mean, he's not only getting hit, you know, on checks, he's out there like checking and forechecking other players. I mean, to me, it's just a remarkable turnaround in his career. I've not seen anything like this. And just to know where he was, where he came, again, dangerous type of a surgery, never been done with an NHL player before. And here we are, we're talking about him being the best player on the ice. That's quite a turnaround. It's a great story.
I think we covered it all, right? I think we got it all.
What type of game do you think we'll have? High scoring?
High scoring. I've actually been
bet the over.
Ooh, you know what? I don't know. So I've actually been betting the unders recently, but it's because the total has been at 6.5 for the Sabres at like four games in a row, which is usually it's higher. That's pretty high.
Yeah. And earlier in the season, they had all the VGK games at 5 and people were cleaning up because they were scoring a lot of goals early in the season.
I think that was,
they adjusted the line to like 6 and it's been around 6, 5.5, 6 now.
I think that was happening here. A bunch of Sabre games in a row had hit the over, and then suddenly we started seeing that 6.5 number thrown out there. And I wonder if that's where that really came from. And it's been under the last couple, but you never know what you're going to get with them. Like the Kings game, they played a great defensive style and they couldn't score. But the Toronto game before that, they had a billion chances, you know? So it could go either way, but I would say after seeing this team all year, it's more likely that you'll see an offensive show, like a 5-4, a 4-3, you know, with a lot of action, because the Sabres at their core, like Don Granato, their head coach, he wants to play an entertaining style. He wants to play up and down the ice. He knows his team has speed. He recognizes they're raw and that they're young, and he recognizes that they're not going to win a lot of games this way, but he's trying to develop them into a team that can win that way. So I think at his core, he wants to play a back and forth game. And again, that's going to be really dangerous when you play a team with as much talent as the Golden Knights. But I think that's what they want to play. And I think that's why I would lean towards a more offensive game.
Yeah. And for me, I think it's going to be an offensive game as well. And Laurent Brossoit gave up 4 goals again to the Ducks. He's lost 3 out of the last 4 regulation games. And major concern for me, because go top shelf. That's what the Ducks did all night long. I mean, they just elevated the puck, and they had a lot of opportunities that they missed, but they did score the 4 goals, and they came back in that game, and they almost came back to tie the game, and then who knows what would have happened. But elevate the puck. If you're a Buffalo, if you're a Sabre player, elevate the puck.
Yep. All right. Well, enjoy the game on Thursday. You guys are 3 hours behind us, right?
You're 3 hours behind you. So I love it, though, because our games are on at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's pretty nice. Yeah, you don't have to stay up super late. Although, like, I don't know. Well, you're in the East. They would never have a game at home where it's at 4 o'clock. So never.
No, they have some NA games, you know, for special occasions, like Nevada Day, and then New Year's Eve was like I think a matinee around 2.
Gotcha.
But yeah, from time to time, periodically, but it is a nice change, you know, for all of us here.
Well, but anyways, 7 o'clock Eastern time for Buffalo fans, and then 4 o'clock for Golden Knights fans. Enjoy the game on Thursday. It's an ESPN broadcast, nationally televised. It'll be fun. We'll see the reaction, what we get. I'm guessing it'll be boos, but we'll see what we get from the Sabre fans treating Jack Eichel back to Buffalo for the first time since the big trade in the fall. Be sure to follow us on social media. I'm at Sneaky Joe Sports. Tony is at Tony Dasco, D-A-S-C-O, for my Sabre fans that wouldn't know how to spell that. Well, it's not too hard. My last name is why I don't put that in my Twitter handle. No one would be able to spell it. DiBiase, just no chance in hell. Check out the Locked On VGK podcast. Check out Locked On Sabres. And thanks for making us your first listen every day. Now go make your second listen, Locked On Fantasy Hockey. Host Steel Roden and Flip Livingstone help you become the expert of your fantasy league. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. Enjoy the game tomorrow.